Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hi, I'm Andrea McLean.
I'm still Nick Feeney.
And between us, we have had 5 weddings.
4 children.
3 divorces.
And 2 dogs.
Richer, poorer, in sickness and in health. It is love, laughter, teenage tantrums and...
Jaffa cakes.
Netflix that gets us through. We hope you'll enjoy this episode with us as we continue to try to master midlife.
Now, we're not experts in midlife and we are crashing through it the same way as you guys are, but we are just curious as to the conversations that we have in our homes and the conversations that you're having and the conversations that our expert guests are having as well. So come with us as we try and master midlife.
Yeah, crashing through, I think, is a very, very good way to put it. And our guests today are David and Cary Grant. Hello, you two.
Hey.
And our theme today is communication. Because, you know, I like to bring a theme, don't I?
You love a theme.
I do love a theme. I like a theme tune. I don't like to sing the theme tune, but good. I do love a theme. And I thought communication is something that obviously Cary and David, you guys are experts in, not only with each other, but also obviously in your professional capacity as well. So I thought what I could do was start off with the sort of whole idea of what is communication? What is communication to you?
What did you say, sorry?
What is communication to you?
Very good.
Do you know what?
Are
it's
you
really
off
interesting.
Because we've got friends around.
Yeah. Dave's my friend.
I am. I even share my ice cream with you.
I was going to say, I'm quite odd for someone that didn't tune in earlier, but yeah, Eddie Murphy. Okay, communication, it's a wonderful thing, isn't it? You know, because we all as humans have to communicate with one another. Yet the issue that we have is all we want to do is be heard. Mm-hmm. And therefore, actually, most people aren't even listening to when we're trying to communicate because they just want you to shut up. So we can actually say our bit. Wow. But I think also what's interesting is actually we talk about what we say and people wanting to hear, but the verbal word is only 7% of communication. And most of it, I can't remember the actual stats.
Oh, good job. I wrote it all down.
Oh, wonderful.
I've got it all here. Now, this is something that I kind of subliminally knew it, but I didn't know it was an actual thing. So basically, there's a scientist. He found that communication is 55% nonverbal, 38% vocal, and 7% is words only, which basically, to sum up, like you said, most of what we communicate to others and most of what we receive from others isn't actually from what we say. Now, I figured this out from my early days of working in television. And obviously, I would put a lot of preparation into, you know, getting my what I was going to say correct. Obviously, clearly, I've lost that skill.
I'm not saying anything.
No, that's yeah. Right. But I would. I'd put a lot of effort into it. And clearly, television's a visual medium. So I paid, slightly less attention to what I was wearing, because to me, it was more important what I was saying. And I picked up very, very quickly that actually the first thing people would notice is your clothes, your hair, how you looked, how you were standing, whether you were smiling or not, the expression on your face, and the rest of it was kind of lost on them. So I was only in my 20s then, and I picked up very quickly that actually, okay, professionally, really what I need to do is give the impression that I know what I'm talking about, and the rest will kind of fill in the gaps. Now, Cary and David, you're nodding along here, obviously in your professional capacity as vocal coaches. So much of what you do is teaching people how to communicate, whether it's, you know, the message of a song or who they are as people, helping them express themselves. Talk us through what your version of or ideas of communication is, starting professionally.
Yeah, I think that... Well, it's interesting. I'm always fascinated by stats, first of all, because they're always based around people that are neurotypical, so normal. And normal is an ideology that has been created via Empire that, you know, this is what we call normal. So do we fit into normal? There are all these people that don't fit into normal that maybe are nonverbal, people that don't say as much. If you look at all the relationships you have around you, some people are great speakers, people articulate really well. Some people articulate well, but they're lying about themselves. Some people are articulating well and really speaking of who they are from the depths of their soul. So it's not really just about the words, you're right. But it's also not just about the body language. And I think that the area that we miss out on so often is the felt space. And that isn't really about brain work, that's about the gut. So we all have heard about in communication how someone talks and you're just thinking, what am I going to say next? You're not really listening. You're semi-listening and you're thinking, what am I going
to
say?
Yeah, most of us listen to respond rather than listening to understand.
Whereas I think in the way my brain works is that when someone's talking, I'm thinking, how do I feel? So I'm working with my gut constantly with, am I comfortable with this? And so I think what my radar, my gut radar is asking for is truth or not truth. Are we, is this person, and this helps the person because I believe that most people want truth. So if you can give them something back that hits that seam in them, that's truth that maybe they haven't even seen yet, that is really going to help them from whether that's singing or acting or even if that's with your children, whatever, whoever, friendships, is to how do we find that seam of truth? So the words that come out of someone's mouth, quite often David and I do a thing called the communication model where we literally just repeat what the person says. So I'm really fed up with you.
You're really fed up with me.
Thank you for just acknowledging that you've heard what I've said. Actually, I'm not really fed up with you. That sounded a bit harsh because now you've said it back. I didn't really mean that. What I actually meant was, why did you make me late today? And so that kind of, you get through conflict, you get, I mean, that's a really simplistic way of doing it, but that thing of—
It really works.
Hearing the words and helping, and not just judging, okay, well, you've just been horrible to me now because you've told me that you've hurt me, to actually get below that to what are you really trying to say? What are you really trying to sing? What are you really trying to create? Where's that coming from? So it's not just about what we observe in terms of the person's words or body language. It's also the other person is deeply involved in that communication because that's almost like a spiritual connection. You're hearing that person's heart. You're hearing their soul if they give you access. Sometimes you get access and they're not giving it. You know, you're hearing it anyway. But just that ability to really hear people, I think that's something that I began to notice about 20 years ago in myself. And I then consciously lent into that and worked on that and thought, okay, that seems to be a really big part of how I listen is with my gut. How does this make me feel? Does that feel true? If it doesn't feel true, it doesn't mean you've told a lie. It might be that I'm just tired. So I try and get myself out of the way at that point and drill into what's going on here, what's really going on. So then the ability to respond without judgment is a lot easier because you've got a whole different motivation for conversations.
Do you know what I really pick up on what you're saying there? And it's interesting that as soon as we brought up the subject of, you know, what is communication, I automatically thought about it from a professional capacity because for many years I've paid to communicate, you know, that's my job. But hearing you talk about it there, you've made me realize that myself as a person, we think that we only hear with our ears. We don't. We receive with our whole being, every fiber of our being. Absolutely. And it's our whole body is receiving invisible communication.
Yes.
Unseen, unheard communication. There's an energy that comes off of a person that, you know, like you walk into a room and you think, I really like you, or, oh, something really funny about you.
Not sure about you.
That's communication. And again, you don't know whether to trust that or not, especially if you've not maybe learned to fine tune it. But I love this idea. And as you were talking, I could visualize it almost like my whole body is a sponge that's absorbing every single thing that is happening. I remember many years ago, funny enough, when I was previously married and I was trying to explain to my ex then, what you don't understand is when you say your words to me, they're like droplets that spray out. And they soak into me like a sponge. And for you, they're gone. And for me, they stay because I've absorbed
and them all. And set up home, right?
Yeah, I've absorbed them all. And again, when we talk about communication, we think of the stuff that comes out. We don't think of how it's received and how it goes in. What do you think of that, Nick? You're looking very pensive.
No, I think, do you know what? I just love how deep the conversations got very quickly on conversation. Yeah. There's a few things I want to pick up on that, but I've just remembered I did a course with an amazing man, Greg Witz, recently, and he just teaches leaders, CEOs, etc., all about communication. And he said the two most important things about communication. And you think, oh, listening. And he said, well, no, it's not actually. It's actually being understood and being seen. That's what we want. Mm-hmm. They're the two key things. You know, and when you talk about, you know, someone that if they let you in, it's you, that energy, that frequency, that unseen communication that we have. You know, if we were to sort of exaggerate it, if I was to bowl into this room and go, oh my God, this amazing thing has happened. The energy coming out with it. I wouldn't have to say much and you guys would already start feeling,
we'd be buzzing because you're buzzing.
Exactly, you're already lifted. Your energy's lifted and everything like that, you know. And that's obviously an extreme. And likewise, if I came in and I was sobbing, you'd already, and you go down. Mm. Yeah, you know, they're the extremes. But the bits in the middle, which is our everyday, still means we're receiving that energy, that frequency and that. Mm. But are we like, you know, sort of rebuffing it because like we're just not open to it? Or actually, is it going in? And is that what gives us a true interpretation of what we hear?
That I believe is really the question, because true communication, one of the elements of true communication isn't about the dissemination of information. It's not about data. It's not about facts. It's about being able to connect what you're experiencing internally. And sometimes words actually obscure meaning rather than revealing meaning. And that's why I think true communication is about, it's about so much more. Mm. It's about seeing and being seen. It's about understanding and being understood. I mean, when I met Carrie and we started going out, there's something that struck me. I'd met a lot of people that I could spend time with. I'm quite a gregarious guy, but I'd never met somebody that I could comfortably share a silence with without feeling as though I had to fill it.
Companionable silence.
Absolutely. Mm. And there's a tremendous, when you are on the same wavelength, there's tremendous communication in silence. And I think one of the things about communication, you know, Carrie was talking about truth and about feeling whether what somebody is expressing is true. Often real communication helps people to discover their own truth.
Mm. You know, if you're a verbal, curiosity helps you to discover.
I mean, I'm a verbal reasoner. And one of the things that I discovered is I didn't always need people giving me solutions. I would find solutions if someone was patient enough to listen and ask the right questions. The questions were actually more important in communication than the answers. I could find the answers if I had the time to someone, if someone gave me the time to listen and then to ask the questions.
I think that goes back to something that you said, you sort of touched on a bit earlier, but I also know that you said it in your book is, and I think this is the male thing, like when someone says something, we go, I can fix that.
Yes.
I got that.
I'm a fixer. Yeah. Leave it with me.
Got it covered. And that's the thing. And, you know, but it comes down to our perspective, isn't it? It's like, I think you touched on this, is you say something to me, right? You're coming at me with what you've got from that day, how your morning is or anything like that. I'm receiving it however my morning's been. So my perspective and your perspective could be absolutely poles apart,
yes,
right, because of the day that we've had. So all of a sudden you may say something to me and I'm picking up on a tone that isn't there or certainly intended to be there because of the morning that I've had. Because David also made me late. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, he does that.
That's
he?
About right.
Right. Yeah. You heard that, did you? And that's the thing. And sometimes because of that, because of how you show up to a conversation, right, your communication skills are challenged.
I think for me, it's always don't judge the first thing that comes out of someone's mouth. Mm. It's just an opening gambit. It's just an opening. It's an opener to the conversation. Mm. And I've seen this time and time with our children where, you know, they say something quite outrageous. And as a parent, you just want to go, that's it, right? My boundary is going down right now. And you want to go all in there, all hard. And actually, they're hurting. And maybe it's a different conversation that they're trying to get into, but they just don't have the sophistication. They just haven't worked out how to tell you what's going on.
It's like the doctor's story, isn't it? You go in there, you see a doctor and all that, and just as you're going out the room, you go, oh, by the way, I've just got this thing.
That's the thing that you're there for.
Exactly that.
I tell you, one of the other things that I find really fascinating with communication is that I think you can identify people who aren't listened to by how they communicate. Mm. And something I've observed is if people aren't listened to and you ask them a question, what is it that you want? What do you want the outcome to be? What do you want to happen? What do you want to gain from this?
Yeah, we often talk
what
about
that. Get
what is do you want the outcome to be?
What you get from them is a list of the things they don't want. Mm. Because they're so unaccustomed to actually anyone taking the time to explore the list that they never get to what they want. Mm. They go, well, I don't want this. I don't want that. I don't want to go here. Yes, but what is it that you actually want? I don't know because I've never gotten to it. Don't want to feel like, I don't want to feel this.
Mm. Nick, something you just said I think is important though, which is about the days that we might have had, and then we, you know, get together and we talk, and sometimes those things, it's like we're on different frequencies or different in different places. I do think there is an inherent way that relationships grow where you know almost by osmosis whether that person is in a greater need than you have. So mm-hmm. I think sometimes you're talking to serve. We don't like these words like serve, but they're beautiful words. Mm. Talking to serve, listening to serve, conversing to serve that your partner. And sometimes you really need someone to serve you. Mm. And that's the joy for me of great friendships, great relationships, great coaching experiences is when that person really serves you, oh my gosh, you feel great afterwards. And equally, what a joy it is to serve someone when you know they're trying to get to the point and they can't quite find it. And you can help them just... It's like shepherding, jog them along to the right, to the left, till they find that sweet spot with like, that's what I wanted to say. Yes, I found it. I found the nugget that I need. That's what I was annoyed about, which might be 1,000 miles away from where they started.
Mm. At that point, communication becomes a voyage of discovery.
Do you know, I think the thing is, in certainly in like in relationships, isn't it? In midlife, all relationships, but this is about midlife, is that we can be with a certain partner for so many years, we can fall into certain patterns, some of them good, some of them not so good, some of them healthy, some of them not so healthy. And as we go through life, ebbs and flows, and it throws different things at us, it's that connection that we have with that person that I feel that sometimes can get lost. And when that connection gets lost, that's when communication, I feel, becomes harder. Because what you were just saying there about, hang on 1 minute, I need you today to hear me. Mm. I need you to serve me, you know, and actually now you, the opposite, right? But if we don't have that connection, I'm not hearing you.
And right. Can I jump in at this point and ask both of you how you've managed to keep that connection going through not just obviously you've been together a long time, been a couple a long time, you've worked together a long time, but the challenges of the dynamics of your family life, which anyone who has children knows that there are challenges. Your family life and your family dynamic is particularly challenging in a way that people who, I suppose you could call them neuronormal children, couldn't really appreciate. I'm really fascinated as to how you've kept that line of communication open I understand that sometimes the broadband might be really wide and strong, yeah. and other times it might be very, very thin. But how have you kept that going?
I think one of the things that I would call a privilege is the length of time that you have together. I think when you've had 37 years together, you kind of, you're resting on like
a bedrock.
You know, that is like, that is privilege, right? But I think, so how it's set up really, you know, if it's the foundations, isn't it? If it's set up wrong, it's going to be a wonky old building that's going to fall over and it's going to topple under the stress. So I think that for David and I, we did put really good foundations in, and that has proven really helpful. Mm. However, I would say in midlife, quite often, and we've experienced this, I think even if there are bits that aren't working properly, and for some marriages, they change completely in midlife. People are not doing the same jobs as they were, their satisfaction,
they don't have the
nesters,
same interests. Mm.
You've got all of those things that happened. We're different, aren't we, as we go into this period. So I think sometimes crisis creates cracks in those foundations, mm-hmm. that actually those cracks are an opportunity to reset things that perhaps weren't there in the beginning. They're an opportunity to go, do you know what? We didn't talk when we were younger because we didn't know how to do that thing because we just weren't that way, we didn't think that way.
And you only know what you know,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. And now we've got a chance with this crisis. You know, when, you know, Andrew, you talk about our kids. So just to give you a really quick, 4 neurodivergent children that have had really serious mental health issues, including, you know, one that was on suicide watch for 3 years on and off. Another child out of school for 3 years, another one with lots of violence. And so that's really challenging. But I do remember one day really clearly when a major crisis was going on, we were waiting for paramedics to arrive, and I sat on the bed and I said, there's nothing we can do right now. Paramedics aren't here. They'll be here in about 4 minutes. Just sit down on the bed. How do we do this well?
How do we do this?
How do we do this bit well? Is there a way of doing this? This is such a crisis. How do we do this well? And we just took 2 minutes. It was like absolute stillness in that bedroom, wasn't it?
Mm.
I mean, okay, right, we just put these things in place. We need to hear each other. We need to not shout at each other at this point, because it's so easy. Just when you're in a panic and you think your child won't live, you just want to scream and shout at everybody.
And scream and shout at the people nearest who you think will take it.
And everything they do is wrong because you're in such a crisis. So just let's just take a moment. We are still together. This is us.
Yeah, we're still us.
We're strong. We are not our children. Mm. We are strong. Mm. Let's just try and do this united. Let's try and do this well together. And think that you could take even the craziest situation like we were in and do our bit well, that I mean, to come to those levels of communication, you know, but they're caused by crisis. Mm. There's nothing, you know, no one's going to want to go there, but that's because most of us want to avoid discomfort. I'm not wishing that on anybody, and I don't want those things to happen in my life. However, when they do happen, I want to use that discomfort to do something
to
good.
Something
otherwise, it's
it well.
Completely useless.
But I would imagine that you too, whilst life isn't in crisis, that you spend a lot of time working on yourselves as well, in a nice way, being loving, seeing each other, dating, yeah. reminding each other, being respectful, you yeah. know, all those things. But I would also imagine having your own time so that you don't lose your own identity and things like that, because we speak about this a lot. Most people, in fact, I said it to this couple that I was coaching this morning, who have been married for a long time. And I said, we almost set ourselves up, don't we, when we get married, because we have this really over-the-top expensive party. Then we go on a really over-the-top expensive holiday honeymoon. Yeah. And then we go to normal life and we're like, oh, is that
it's a bit dull by comparison.
But the thing is, then we think, okay, that's it. And we just crack on and life's going to happen to us and for us.
Yeah.
But ultimately, that's when the work starts, isn't it? So when you do get those moments of crisis, which we don't actually, like you say, no one wants, but ultimately, if you are living life and you're having children and you're moving forward, it's going to come to you.
Yes.
Right? It's those bits you do when they're not there that gives you that strength, stability, and that calmness.
I think that
for you to actually say,
you're absolutely right. The other thing that I believe, why what you said is so essential, is because in a relationship that's gone on for a few years, You know, I'm not even talking about decades, like that's just a few years. You can very easily begin to do things from memory. Mm-hmm. You can phone it in.
We love a pattern.
I know who you were. Mm-hmm. I know who you were 5 years ago. This is what you like. This is what you want to do. This is what you're going to say. And my goodness, you know, I know I have heard people say as an insult and as a slur to their partners, you are not the man I married. You are not the woman I married. Thank God Carrie isn't the woman I married. Because I wouldn't know what to say to a 23-year-old who was living in my house. I wouldn't know what to say. You know what I mean? We have lived life. And in middle age, I want to say, whoa, we have had all of this life that we've lived together, and that life has changed us. And we need to stay in constant connection so that we're changing in the same, or so that we understand one another's changes. I thank God I'm not the man that Carrie married, because the man that Carrie married couldn't have coped with the life we've lived and the challenges we had.
Amen to that. Absolutely.
Actually, I would also say that your partner can't solve who you are. It's not, David is not my God. I champion David, I cheerlead David. I'm not his God, because he needs to go elsewhere for all that stuff. He needs to work himself out, and I need to work myself out.
Yep.
And I think in a way that actually takes a lot of pressure off the relationship. I'm not looking for David to be the center of my universe.
Carrie's not responsible for my happiness. But I am responsible for my happiness.
And that's great. And we totally hear you on that. But most people don't realize that. You know, and they say, oh, it's my other half. He completes me, or she completes me. And actually, you know, this is where, you know,
a strange narrative, people, right?
It is.
Like, I want my kids to be happy. All those strange narratives we have.
You have to be complete.
Yes.
They have to be complete. Yes. Like, I am whole without Andrea. Andrea is whole without me.
Yes.
Our two whole circles, when they meet, the Venn diagram, the bit, that's us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why you're so amazing. That's why you guys are magic, literally, because I'm looking at that right now and you feel it. Your energy is magic. Your relationship is so beautiful, but it's because of what you've just said.
Yes, it's not that you're bringing your weakness and saying, this is the area you're strong, you carry that, and you're doing the same to Nick. You're actually saying, here's my wholeness, here's your wholeness, let's be whole together.
Absolutely.
Well, that's really kind of you. I really appreciate that. Thank you. It's only taken 54 years to get there.
And three marriages.
Andrea, we knew you years ago, and you... She was always sitting there. She was always there.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a whole other level now. It's like, whoa.
She's out.
It's great.
You know what? I think that one of the great things about sort of midlife is that you can begin to recognize what's in you. And you can begin to recognize it even when others don't. You know, even when somebody doesn't see who you are. I think the thing with midlife, certainly from my perspective, is I don't really care what people say about me. It's what I say about myself that matters. And as long as I don't say it, you were always a diamond. A diamond doesn't become a diamond at the point that somebody identifies it. Somebody who doesn't know what a diamond looks like will pass it and go, there's a shiny stone. It doesn't mean the diamond's devalued. It means it's not been recognized. 100%. And I think you get to midlife, and if you are prepared to say, who am I? What do I want? How do I want to spend the time that I have left? Yeah. I can do nothing with what I've lost. I may have lost youth. I may have lost energy. I may have lost this, that, and the other. Can't do anything with it. I can do everything with what I've got left. Who am I? Not who do you think I am?
Yes.
Who do I think I am?
Do you know, you have summed up so well exactly how I felt when I quit my job. That was how I felt. You know, I've done this job that people are banging the door down to get in.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at it thinking, I don't want this anymore. And that is exactly how I felt. Who am I? Not who does everyone think I am? And also the status that I have, what is that worth? Who am I? And exactly what you said, I can't do anything about everything that I've lost or what other people might perceive as failings. That's all gone now. That is what it is. Yeah. And now I literally wanted to strap a parachute to my back and leap.
Leap.
Yeah. And wow, has it been bumpy. And I've had a few birds splat me in the face on the way down. It's all fine. But it's all good. Can I pick up, and thank you for your kind words. I really do appreciate them. I want to pick up on something that you said when you're talking about a moment of intense crisis in your relationship. So the two of you, you're sitting on this bedroom floor, and the kind of hell that you're living in those 4 minutes of waiting for an ambulance to arrive, none of us want to imagine ourselves in that situation. But sometimes in crisis, people come together and they work really well, and that's okay. But in other times, it's the paper cuts of crisis that make communication, that make marriages and relationships fall apart. It's not always one big thing. Sometimes we cope really well when there's a big thing. It's the day-to-day grind of things not being as you thought they would. Mm. And David, I remember you put it so eloquently in your book, and I urge everyone to go and buy your book, A Very Modern Family. It's a beautiful read and a very insightful read. And an insight into a life that very few people can imagine. Where obviously you had a very preconceived idea as to what parenthood would be about what, you know, you're a West Indian man, you had a West Indian upbringing, you're going to be the strict dad who they're kind of scared of you, but they love you.
And, you got it.
You lived in our house.
So we all go into relationships with preconceived ideas, whether it's about relationships, whether it's about parenting, whatever. And obviously, Carrie, you brought your own expectations as well. True. And yet you find yourself so many years later, in this instance, you're sitting on a bedroom floor, and you have children who are so far removed from what society would see as normal with their behavior and everything else. How did you cope with the day-to-dayness of that?
Me? Yeah, go on.
Oh my goodness. It was a journey. I, as you say, had a preconceived idea. I didn't grow up with a dad. I grew up with an absent dad. I was brought up by my mother and my grandmother. And so I didn't have a day-to-day visual aid of fathering or of husbanding. Which is just as well, because I think if Carrie and I had that, we would probably have ended up with my father married to Carrie's mother, you know, and role playing, and that would have been a recipe for disaster. But I was terrified when Carrie was pregnant the first time, and I went to see a friend, and I was like, I don't know what to do. I got no idea how to be a dad. How do I make a kid feel secure? What do? You know, and I took a notebook, and my friend, who's a brilliant dad, put the notebook away. Here's what you do. If you want your child to feel secure, love your partner. I was like, oh, I can do that. But I still had in my mind, these are the kids I was going to have. You know, we're going to sit in a restaurant, kids will be reading the menu in French, 4 years old. order pasta in Italian, and other people would be looking and going, now that is how you do it. My goodness, have you seen that family over there? The children are so polite.
They are. They're still saying, have you seen that family over there?
Yeah.
But not you did get what you wanted.
But not for any of the reasons I had anticipated. You know,
the wrong sort of friend.
Yeah. The very wrong sort of friend.
When you put your wishes out to the universe, you have to be
mixed with Anglo-Saxon, as are the kids under the table, you know, like that. Don't no food fights, please. But I clung to an outmoded method of parenting, you know, and Carrie very quickly saw this isn't working for our kids, you know, and I the way that I express it, guys, is that I spent years fathering children I didn't have anywhere but in my head, and thinking that if I kept on doing it like this, they'd turn out to be the kids I imagined I had. And it didn't work. You know, like Carrie jumped ship. Carrie was just like, no, this ship isn't working. It's not taking us anywhere good. Carrie jumped ship. I strapped myself to the mast, went down singing Nearer My God to Thee as the waves engulfed me, just going, this is how you do it. And eventually, from being in different libraries in different cities, we got on the same page, but it took a while. I had to accept that what I thought I knew was wrong, because parenting is bespoke. I thought it could be one size fits all. Relationships are bespoke. So when people ask me for marriage advice, I'm like, I'm the wrong person. I know how to be married to one person. You know, you're not marrying her because I'm married to her. So there's only a limited amount that I can tell you. And it's the same with parenting. I believe I've become a reasonably good father to the children I've got. And what's worked, we've put lots of strategies in the book, but they have to, every strategy has to be flexible because it has to suit your kids. I was brought up with that very, very Caribbean, very West Indian. This is how you do it. This is what you do. And if you don't conform to it, it's you. But actually, it's not. It's for us to discover who our children are. If somebody had discovered who I was when I was 10 years old, I wouldn't have had to be discovering it at 50.
How many midlife people do you think, listening to what you've said just then, that one little sentence, if someone had let me discover who I was at 10, the amount of time we could save, amount of pain we could have saved ourselves, because we're trying to live a life that our parents and our grandparents still been fed downwards. It's nobody's fault because everyone's just repeating the patterns.
I think in some ways there's a gift when there's neurodivergence, when you're not kind of what we call normal. I think because you're never going to fit in. And if you don't fit in, actually, it kind of removes the box and allows you, it's a slower grow, but actually in some ways it can be very difficult, but I think in some ways you reach those milestones sooner because you're never going to fit in. Our children are never going to fit in. If you sit with our 28-year-old, you would be flabbergasted at their wisdom. Like, they sound like an 80-year-old sage. They are incredible.
They clearly don't get it from me.
They didn't, because they've just been allowed to just be.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And they're wonderful. And it's a slower way of growing. You know, it maybe doesn't, it's slow. So I say it's slower in the sense that those parameters that all parents have to are expected to put on their children just simply don't work for our children. They don't work. Yeah. And they don't work for many children. So allowing our children to be who they are, yes, it has its challenges, but actually as they begin to get into their 20s, my gosh, the fruit that you start to see, you're like, whoa, they're incredible. Our 28-year-old and our 22-year-old are just wonderful.
They're incredible.
There's a bit in the book, Kerry, where you it's near the end, and it's almost like a love letter to parents, where you say, but it's about failure. And basically you talk about all of us fail as parents.
Gosh, yes.
And if we let that help us, if we let that drown us, and we feel like we're constantly getting it wrong, don't. Because actually it's fine.
It's okay.
You did what you knew at the time, and now you know more, you will do better.
Yeah.
And it's all okay. Even if you have really, really messed up, really, really messed up, and you know, your 16-year-old is sitting in her bedroom, or your 20-something-year-old is gone off and not speaking to you, whatever. It's all okay, because tomorrow you can start again. And I cried when I read that, because not only for myself as a parent and a step parent, and we are juggling our own things like every parent does, but I thought of so many friends who needed to hear that are single parents, that are co-parenting in a really challenging
situation. Oh my gosh, single parents. Let's just give props to single parents right now. How on earth do they do it? I don't know how my mum did it, Dave. I don't know how David's mum did it.
There are two of us, and I can just about barely hang on.
Yeah. Like, my goodness, those people are amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I think we criticize ourselves. For some reason, we are super hard, especially women on women about mothering, what mothering is meant to look like. Like, for goodness sake, can we stop that? Just be who you are. Be gentler on yourself, because we're not doing ourselves any good by being so judgmental. That's not helping us or our children.
See, I genuinely believe wise people make more mistakes than fools. Because the only difference between a fool and a wise person isn't the number of mistakes they make. It's whether they learn from their mistakes. If you have never made a mistake, you never acquired any wisdom, because you've had nothing to learn from. You've had nothing to grow from. You've had nothing to look at and say, where did that go wrong? Let me make sure that that doesn't happen again. Let me make another mistake. But that's fine. I won't make that one again.
Yeah. You're right.
You're going to fail. We need friction in life, right? I think the funny thing is what you were just saying, that love letter and where we are. And I think you said earlier, you know, it's like you did use the word that what you knew about parenting, you got it wrong. It wasn't wrong. It just didn't work.
No, it wasn't.
For your dynamic.
That's right.
You know, and I think the thing is, to sort of wrap this bit up, is we look back at our parents. Our parents did not do anything wrong or deliberately intentional to fuck us up. They tried their best, right? Yet we all go, yeah, I'm not going to do that when I'm mum and dad.
Yeah.
And we put so much pressure on ourselves as parents. We go, we're going to be awesome. We're going to be amazing and all that. And our children will still be going, yeah, I'm going to do that either.
Yeah.
With my kids.
Well, I feel like we were the generation that were like, it's all about my parents. They got it all wrong. We forgot to realise that actually we were then going to be parents, and then we would get the same thing said.
Exactly. And yeah. we repeat. And I think if we just allow ourselves, A, understand that that's going to happen, and we say this to our children, we're a few steps ahead of you. Right, I was young once, now I'm not. Now I'm trying to do my best. Yeah. Say sorry when you realise you mucked up.
Sorry is so beautiful.
Yes.
Right. Have that conversation with your kids and go like that. Do you know what? On reflection, I did get that wrong.
Yep.
Or on reflection, I did overreact. Yeah. Right? Not sorry, but.
Parents ever apologise to you? Mine never. No. I never ever heard
I don't
sorry.
Think so.
When David first said sorry to me, I cried. I wept because no one had ever said sorry to me. And I just thought, this is the most beautiful word. I love this word. I'm going to start using it. Now I use it all the time. I love this concept of just really apologizing when you screw up.
But do you know what? The importance of that as well, the lesson that you teach, and again, funny enough, I said this to this couple that I was coaching a couple of weeks ago, because there was an issue about something that the child had done and she had gone in and she had to be very quick in her decision making and everything like that. So she said it, and she said, on reflection, I think I was too hard, but I've said it, so that's it. I went, oh, no. I said, now here's an opportunity for you to show your child that sometimes actually how you are in a situation, you can reflect on it and go back and say, hey, do you know what? I did get that slightly wrong. It's not going to be 2 weeks without your electronics. It's going to be a week. Because that wasn't right, but this wasn't right. And what you're now showing them is it's okay to admit that you got something wrong.
What a valuable lesson.
Of course it is. Otherwise you're just raising a letter perfectionist.
It's not getting it wrong. It's a lesson.
I remember going into our eldest at the point, how old were they? 25, 26. And they said something. And I was like, no, it's this. I came back about 15 minutes later and said, I've checked it. You're absolutely right. And sorry. I went away, and later on, they were with their friends. Said, my mum and dad have never said, you know what, you were right, I was wrong, I'm sorry. And I thought how maybe that's an indication of some of the journey. You are not diminished by saying, I was mistaken there. In fact, what it does mean is that when you are certain, people will trust your certainty.
But go back to these people who are wonderful parents to their, but she thought that if she went back on something, she was actually changing her word. And actually now, and this goes back to a comment, you only know what you know until someone shows you something else, a different way. And now she's like, oh my God, it's actually really freeing, because I don't have to be right all the time. And I don't have to stand behind something that at the time I thought was right, but now I no longer think it's right. That takes a lot of pressure off you and a lot of pressure off that relationship.
There's definitely something in our society, I think, that says that you go to school, if you're fortunate, you might go to university, and then you kind of, your growth stops. Mm. Like, what? Why do we do that? Like, that's really stupid.
Keep growing until like, the day you just draw your last breath.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a thing called taste freeze that we were talking about. How taste freeze apparently happens at 24. The music you loved, the movies you loved, the fashions you loved, kind of stop at 24.
That explains why my dad only listens to rock and roll.
Yeah, for most people.
And likes Tonics, Weepers.
And likes Tonics, Caramel. Yeah.
And I think that actually, if we're not careful, we can get to the middle of our lives and be referring to the early parts of our lives for our compass, our indicator of who we are and who we should be, rather than saying, you know, that's who I was. And it's never too late to be who I thought I wanted to be. Mm. I can start where I am. Mm. And, you know, I think it's so important that we don't get the equivalent of taste freeze with our behavior, in our relationships, in our perception of what's possible.
I would imagine a lot of that comes from the front lobe finishing forming. Mm. Near 25. Yes. And with our neural pathways that essentially are what we create to give us our identity and the beliefs and how we see the world, whilst we can continue to make new, we tend to sit in the grooves we've already created.
Yeah.
And that's where I believe that we start getting, you know, very pattern, very routine,
groove becomes a rut
because this is who we are and how we do it.
Mm. Which is why disruption is so helpful.
100%.
If you're using it.
I want to wrap up this conversation by quoting you two back at you. So there were bits like in the book. It's all good. It's all good.
He said, she said.
Yeah. I genuinely loved your book so, so much. And I genuinely urge every parent to read this, because it's such a beautiful book. So David, this bit just resonated with me so much. The parent in you is an extension of the person you are. An absence of self-forgiveness leaves us holding on to the person we were. To become the best parent we can today, we must forgive and let go of the worst of who we were yesterday. So to any parent who is thinking, so I totally messed up that, it's all okay.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to quote you back at you, Kerry. This made me cry. This literally made me cry. People speak of hope as if it is this delicate, ephemeral thing made of whispers and spider's webs. It's not. Hope has dirt on her face, blood on her knuckles, the grit of cobblestones in her hair, and just spat out a tooth as she rises for another go.
Yeah, that is a quote from somebody else, but yes.
I love it. It gives me goosebumps. Yeah. That is hope.
Yeah,
yes. That is what keeps us putting one foot in front of the other. Absolutely. Even when we are literally and figuratively battered down by life.
Right.
That it's hope.
You've
that
got
makes
it.
Us
you can do this. You've got this.
And hope and character grow in the same way as muscles. They grow through resistance, through pushing against, through lifting what you can't lift, through getting stronger. They don't grow in calm seas. They grow in the storms. They don't grow on the beach. They grow in the gales.
They grow through mastering midlife.
Oh, listen to you.
Drop the mic, Dave. Drop the mic again.
Boom.
Now, we like to end the show with just something a little bit light. So we thought we would very quickly play a little game with you. It's 1 minute. It's super fast. Do you want to take turns doing this, Nick?
Yeah, we will. I'm going to put on my reading glasses.
Your reading glasses,
yes,
okay.
So I can actually read.
I'm just going to develop very long arms so I can.
Okay. It is basically a quick fire this and that.
Is it this?
And we talk about. And we talk about like communication and being on the same page.
Yep. Yeah.
So let's see if you're on the same page with some of these things. Okay.
You go first.
Now, what these are, these will remind you of your childhood, I believe. Frazzles or space invaders?
Space invaders.
Space invaders. Yeah.
Ooh. Chop dips or wagon wheels?
Oh, wagon wheels.
Wagon wheels, yeah.
Penguin or club?
Club.
100%.
Viennetta or Arctic roll?
Viennetta.
Arctic roll.
Ooh. Damn right. Love Arctic roll.
Yeah.
That's the age difference.
Yeah.
Ooh, right there.
Ouch. You
it's
need
going,
to go there.
It's going so well.
Okay. Cheese strings or Dairy Lee Lunchables?
Oh, cheese strings.
Ooh. Yeah, cheese strings, because they're just that.
Yeah.
Thing is good, right?
Also, because I used to do the advert.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I said a cheese string and make the boy do my sing.
I never knew that.
Oh, yeah, that
brilliant. Nobody knows that.
Cheese strings pay down mortgage.
I love that.
See that sofa? Yes, cheese string.
That is brilliant.
Okay, drumstick lollies or fruit salad?
Fruit salads. And blackjacks together.
Mm, are they the ones with the penny sweets?
Oh, you're thinking fruit salad. Okay.
Yeah, I was just thinking about my teeth.
Well, you'll love this next one then. Sunny D or Capri Sun?
Sunny D. Capri Sun, I reckon.
Yeah.
You couldn't sell that now, could you? You couldn't sell a Sunny D.
No, it's the least worst option.
Okay, ice gems or rainbow drops?
Oh, ice gems.
Rainbow drops.
Okay, Finder's crispy pancakes or pizza pockets?
I've not had either of those.
Oh my God.
I'm trying to think of the...
You've jumped into a new
era.
I'm
a pancake man.
Oh, these were amazing.
And finally, we're going posh now. Pineapple and cheese sticks or cocktail sausages?
Pineapple and cheese,
ooh, yeah,
for sure.
Yeah,
on a tin foil circle.
But it depends if the cocktail sausages are warm and there's mustard to dip them in.
Okay.
Then it's got to be.
What house did you grow up in?
You never got mustard.
What house did you grow up in? That was not in my house.
We never had either.
Cold apple.
We never had either of them in my house. It's just like somebody's coming around with the canapes. I'm like, oh, warm sausage and mustard.
We had the cheese and pineapple with some tin foil mouth stabbed in.
Grapefruit underneath.
I love all that.
Yeah. Tinfoil grapefruit.
Well, thank you for playing this.
You guys have been amazing. We've so loved our conversation.
I hope it made sense.
And I do think actually that everything that you said is going to resonate so much, and there are so many takeaways there. And I hope you enjoyed it too. And I hope you join us next time as we continue to crash through and yet attempt to master midlife.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy and features real testimonials.
This was our first time trying therapy, and honestly, it was long overdue. Looking back, we just wish we had started sooner.
Regain's qualified therapists help couples when they can't get there on their own.
We thought it was intimacy issues, but Andrea helped us uncover a deeper root cause we hadn't even realized was there.
Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. Regain, powered by BetterHelp.